Bloomington's Voice, 98.7. It's happy hour here on a Thursday. And if it's Thursday afternoon, that means my great friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star is riding shotgun. What's up, my man? How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good deep breath there to get ready. Inhale. Yeah, we're ready. It's been a tough week. And again, condolences to our the Stoltz family, Shelby and Charlie and Liv and all the friends and relatives of our great friend Terry Stoltz. We will not be on the air tomorrow. Terry's showing is at viewing is tomorrow from 2 to 8 at the Funeral Chapel on East 3rd Street over there by Chick-fil-A. Pal and Deckard. Eric does a great job over there, as we know. Yeah, so that's why we will not be with you tomorrow. So this is our last hour with you this week, and UNT had a relationship as well, Zach. I know the great medium of Twitter, sadly, people don't like it or whatever. Well, that's how we met, and I know that you and Terry had plenty of interaction before you became friendly enough to share text messages and everything else. And, just guy that loved hoops, guy that loved radio, and guy that loved being a part of all the big stuff.
Yeah, I think I first met him.
Probably Yogi's.
The old Yogi's crew, like that old golf draft crew. I don't think I've ever even said this to you, but it is a strange thing being, and I know you'll have walked this walk too. It's a strange thing being in your mid-20s in this town when you're too old to really feel comfortable partying with the students or living that sort of, you know, we're going out every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night kind of lifestyle. But you're too young to have kids, to be in, you know, communities, more in the community, more feeling like you're just kind of part of the town and you're part of the fabric of the city rather than the, you know, these two things interact and intersect, but the, rather than sort of the fabric of the school, the university. And, all you guys, 'cause my wife and I lived at the, around this time, we still lived around downtown. And Yogi's was, you know, a place we went to a lot in college and after college. And all of you always made me feel that was that always felt like the first social circle that I had in this town
as an adult.
That was, yeah. I mean, essentially, you know, that I felt comfortable sort of, you know, just not being a student, but not just sort of being this random 20 something that was sort of trying to figure out, you know, where life was going and where I fit in all of it. And, you know, you and Brad and Duke and Dave, who've of course we also
lost
recently, and Terry, just that whole crew, and Joe. Happy birthday, Joe! And I'm forgetting somebody, David Novak. But just like that whole group was always just so welcoming to me, and you know, helped me kind of find a place in Bloomington, sort of post college, into, you know, actually sort of once it was decided that, like, we're going to settle here, we're going to make a home here, and, you know, all that. And he was a good man. He was a good friend. And, you know, one of those people that always he was one of those people that if you had a question, he had an answer. And sometimes it was about trivia, like sports and things like that. Sometimes it was about, you know, home improvement. I mean, like, you know, Dex, I mean, yeah. I would ask him just, how would you do this? Because, you know, I got more into home improvement as I got older, and he'd always be able to walk you through something or tell you who could do something. Or
he knew everybody in town.
That he did. Out. I mean, like, I remember I needed a patio door once when we were moving, and the buyers on our outgoing home wanted a door replaced that was getting kind of old and showing it. And he was like, we don't have any, I'll just call. And he called, like, Lowe's, and he said, let me speak to, you know, Brandon. It wasn't like, let me talk to
the guy, know, yeah,
windows and doors. Yeah. It was like he knew who to talk to. Oh, they got one over there. Just go over there. You know, they'll take care of you. And I don't know if I'll get him in trouble posthumously by saying that, because I know he worked at Black Lumber.
Well, but if he didn't have it, he's just helping you. That's the beauty of it.
No, he was one of those people that you could always count on for a smile, for a good conversation.
Great guy, and you had a very poignant. We always talk every day, me and Osterman do, and our little chat box. And your chat box today was poignant, and it was smart. Tell the story about the editor. It was a sad story, but it made sense.
Yeah, no,
we're doing it right now. So well, that's why. Yeah, it no, makes
when
sense.
I was when I was in college, I was the editor in chief the summer of the IDS, the summer of 2007, when our student media director passed away unexpectedly, and his name was Dave Adams, and Dave, you know, we sort of struggled with. You know, one of the rules of journalism is you're kind of not supposed to be the story, but at the same time, it was sort of like, well, this is the only story. This is a, you know, he'd been at Indiana for 20 years.
It wasn't a student
fixture. No.
Gotcha.
He was an
advisor faculty.
I think he was in his late 50s, and there was an alumnus who at the time was the editor of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette named Craig Klugman, who would act sometimes as a mentor to the IDS staff when we needed sort of a professional opinion. And Craig said something that's always stuck with me. He said, one of the benefits of working in newspapers is when you die, there's no obituary too long.
Right.
And I think that's just sort of true of media in general. No one wishes for the day, but when it is time to memorialize someone who works in that world, there is no tribute too lengthy, too involved, too honest, too...
You're not worried about column too inches genuine. That day, are you?
No, not at all.
And same thing in the airwaves of radio, and you thought that was interesting, and I'm glad we could talk about our great friend like that, because he did influence us. And this time of year was one of his most favorite. You had the opening day of baseball coming up next a week from today. You have the NCAA tournament now. Indiana, it's been a while since Indiana's been relevant in that, but still, we follow it, fill out our brackets, live and die with every basket. Like everybody else, the Masters next week, just all the great things, the state championships, high school as well. And we'll miss Terry, but we will live, we'll help him, his memory live through this because he had so much fun. And no one loved talking Indiana basketball more than T did. He went to games in the old field house. You've heard him tell the stories on the show 1,000 times with his father, and he's been around IU hoops his entire life. And, well, here we are. And in every spring since 1987, we've had a conversation very similar to this. What went wrong? How did it go wrong? Why did it go wrong? And how can we fix it? I was doing the weather earlier today, and I went back. I usually tell everybody at least once a day what the records were. And the record low today is March 23rd, 2002. And then I said to myself out loud on the air, I was like, gee, oh, 21 years. Yeah. And this was a season where we thought perhaps in early December that number of 21 years could possibly be on the way out. And, well, here we are on the 23rd day of March talking about what could have been, not what is going to be tonight. You were in Chicago to see Indiana win one, lose one. You were in Albany to see Indiana win one, lose one. With the exception of Michigan on senior day and that first game in the Big Ten tournament, it was win one, lose one for the majority of the last third of the season. What did go wrong? Is it that simple as just saying, well, Xavier Johnson screwed up the entire balance of this team? That's part of it. But
I think what Xavier Johnson's injury did was it narrowed Indiana's list of options.
I think defensively and offensively.
Yes, but both ways. And it took a player that obviously grew into his role commendably in Trey Galloway in Johnson's absence as a starter. But it took Galloway off the bench, which suddenly meant your bench, which looked like it was going to be a bit of a weapon with like Galloway and Bates and Malik Renew.
And nobody replaced Galloway's bench spot.
Right. And other than maybe Tamar Bates elevating his defense a little bit by the end of the season, I thought he got better there. But offensively, he just never found his shot consistently. And so suddenly you're playing basically a seven-man rotation by the end of the season. I think defensively, you know, even if we remove the Arizona and the Kansas games – you know, you think about some of the ugliest sort of defensive performances for this team this season. They were all teams of a similar complexion in terms of
wings.
Miami, yeah. Penn State, Iowa, smaller, spread you out, mismatch somewhere, whether it was, you know, like a Jordan Miller for Miami, it was a Keegan Murray, it was a Jalen Pickett or a Seth Lundy. and they could just put you in ball screen actions until you switched enough screens that they got a big on a small, and you were kind of in a position where, okay, well, Trayce Jackson-Davis now can't be a factor in the rebound game because he has to stay at the rim because we know we're going to give up dribble penetration, and we need him to be there to deter the easy ones, the layups, the dunks, the lobs. And so then you just kind of wound up, again, just being limited in the sorts of matchups you could handle. I thought, you know, I've had a number of people sort of say to me after the Miami game, they thought Miami was playing harder in that game. And I think there were probably times when they were. I think you could tell Indiana was sort of recognized, okay, last 5 minutes, season slipping away.
Yeah.
But all the times that I think those people were talking about Miami playing harder, I think Miami was just playing faster. It looked like they were playing harder because they were quicker. When there were two people racing to a rebound, Miami got to it first because in a foot race, this guy was faster than this guy. And it's not you don't absolve everyone of every sin just because Xavier Johnson got hurt. But I think that, if anything, Jalen Hood-Schifino's improvement this season, almost like maybe the best tribute you can pay to it, is it made us forget how important Xavier Johnson was supposed to be to this team at both ends of the floor. The big three for this team were going to be Trayce Jackson-Davis, Jalen Hood-Schifino, and Xavier Johnson. If anybody behind those three, even possibly Rhys Thompson, maybe not Miller Kopp because he was a volume three-point shooter, but just about anybody behind those three breaks their foot at Kansas, you can probably live with it if you're Indiana. But any one of those three players gets taken out of the rotation for the rest of the year, it's devilishly difficult to replace them. And those guys did not complete a game together after November,
which is amazing.
And that's just – and sometimes, I mean, you know, sometimes that's just kind of how it works. It's, you know, it's year two under a head coach that, by his own admission, doesn't normally build rosters around players like Trayce Jackson-Davis. He's not taking shots at Jackson-Davis when he says that. He's just saying, this isn't normally the brand of basketball I play. So you're not going to have just this, like, you know, if it were like Kansas, Bill Self might have somebody down near the end of the bench that's not ready, but Self recruited him and Self has developed him for a couple years. And so when he needs to move everybody up a peg, that guy sliding into like the Trey Galloway spot is a little bit more capable and ready. You're not going to have that in year two under Mike Woodson in Indiana, and certainly not when, I would argue, and I imagine we'll talk about this, the roster's going to transition a little bit, you know, in terms of its complexion here in the post-Rhys Thompson, Trayce Jackson-Davis sort of era. And what you had was a team that just steadily kind of ran out of options when it got the wrong matchups.
And it knew that.
The season. Yeah.
I think that's the thing that you saw in those games. You kind of, even the Penn State game, even the, which one? Both, I mean.
But the one in the more competitive tournament. One in Chicago still,
right.
It feels like Indiana's swimming against the current for a lot of that game. And it's a similar game where they chase most of the first half, they get the lead, or maybe they tied it. Maybe they took the lead briefly early in the second half, and then they just, like, one more adjustment from the other side was basically one answer too many. You know, if you think about a game as, you know, a basketball game as a chess match of, like, opening move and counter and, you know, counter and counter and counter, one counter too many, Penn State and Miami both.
Oh, and you had teams that could shoot it from four guys on the floor. That was where Indiana. The 0-2 against Penn State, 0-2 against Iowa, 0-2 against Northwestern. I mean, that's just that's what it was. 12-8, third place in the league. Little fool's Goldie there. Little fool's Goldie, just because the league was such a cluster in the middle there.
Yeah, I think that. But to be fair, they were the only team that swept Purdue.
That's the.
I think that.
And then the irony of all this is Michigan State's the only team in the league that's in the Sweet 16. So we're just going around and around in these circles. I'm not going to get in. If we get to it later, we'll get to it later about the Big Ten. We got all summer for that.
Yeah.
But this team, I think the haters forgot how important Xavier Johnson could have been. And I can see it from both ways because Johnson was gone for so long you had to figure it out. But I think what it ultimately told you was this roster was not perfectly designed in the sense nobody carries two-point guards, and they did. Mm-hmm. Now they only could use one of them. That's amazing. But just
the whole thing was designed around having two of them.
Exactly right. And the other part of that was just because Galloway moves into the starting lineup – somebody physically takes his place but does not physically bring what Galloway brings. Galloway would play in spurts when he came off the bench, knowing he wouldn't have to stay out there for 35 minutes.
And he could be more aggressive. He didn't have to worry about foul trouble.
He's a secondary ball handler now, and it just totally changed. And you can point out his great three-point shooting, but I don't think that helped as much as having the 20 minutes of hell on wheels that he was previously. Now, the shooting was fine. We did not shoot anybody either. That was the other part. Yeah. We didn't have enough bodies to throw at it. And the effort part, you talked about them being quicker or maybe more athletic or whatever. I'm not going to argue that. But effort is kind of like hustle. It's kind of like attitude. It's really immeasurable until you start measuring it. And 11 first-half offensive rebounds, that shows me effort. Because boxing a guy out and going to get the basketball isn't always goes to the fastest, the strongest. Dennis Rodman was 6'8", won 100 rebounding titles. A guy's bigger and stronger and faster than him. You have to have want, desire, and everything else to go with that. To see those offensive rebound numbers pile up, that was the damning part for me. That's why I tweeted, wow, I didn't think it would happen like that. I thought that wasn't going to be. If somebody hits 18 threes on you like IPFW did in the old days or whatever, you take your cap off to it. But when you hold them to miss shots or bad shots and they get a third shot and make that one, that's the tough part. I get your point, and I don't think you're wrong, but I just seeing the ball hit the floor from a defensive rebounding standpoint, which you have told us and these listeners for 3 years now, a defensive rebound does what? It stops the possession. Yeah. So if you keep giving them chances and keep giving them chances and keep allowing time for more breakdowns and keep allowing time to get mismatches and everything else, you're killing yourself. So that was a huge part. Woodson talked about that at halftime. He said, we can't let it keep going. Well, they end up with 20 offensive rebounds?
20.
Yeah. I mean, that's
29 second chance points plus 18 in second chance
right.
points.
And we saw in the latter part of the season Indiana start getting out rebounded, which mm-hmm. was one of their big things. And Indiana's not small. Galloway 6'5, Huchefino 6'5, Kopp 6'7,
but Race is 6'9. If you look at Trace percentages, the only one of the guards, the only one of the non bigs that's a double, like in terms of percentages,
right,
a double digit sort of rebound rate player defensively is Huchefino.
The and only one is?
The other one who, again, was a very good defensive rebounder for a guard is Xavier Johnson. And this also goes back a little bit to style, which is if you basically just leave Trayce Jackson-Davis at the rim, or you tell Trayce Jackson-Davis whenever the action moves toward the rim, you move with it. You don't post up in a rebound spot because you need to get to the rim because we can't contest the shot otherwise. Well, then suddenly you have buried your best rebounder at the bottom of the floor. Race Thompson's rebounding percentages dropped noticeably this season. I think, you know, commendably, if you want to see it this way, however you want to see it this way, it was pretty clear by the end of the season that while he was playing post-knee injury, he was nowhere near his best self.
Saw little flashes of it.
Little bits and pieces, but like if you look at
what game did he have 20? Was that the first Big Ten game?
No, he had 20 against Kent State.
Oh, first was, NCAA game.
Yeah, okay. That was because that was two off of his season high. And he had more points as the season went on, in part because it felt like Indiana had to revert to a little bit of that bully ball because they kind of stopped taking threes and things had become more limited offensively. But defensively, you look at his rebound numbers, his per-game numbers, his per-possession numbers, they were substantially lower than they were a year ago, substantially lower than they were 2 years ago. They reflected a player who – until the very end of the season, didn't admit it, but probably was not really that healthy, even coming off of the knee injury and coming back from it. And so basically, you've got the guy who last season was cleaning up all the rebounds Trayce Jackson-Davis couldn't get to because he was protecting the rim, not being able to do that quite as well. You've got one of the two guys that you were basically counting on to be your guard rebounders because Indiana's defense, especially with Trayce Jackson-Davis at the rim, forces a lot of jumpers because people pull up or they shoot from 8 feet because they don't want to go all the way to the rim because Trayce Jackson-Davis blocks shots so well. But that means you're going to give up shots that lead to longer caroms, which means you're looking to the Trey Galloways and the Miller Copps and the Jalen Huchefinos and the Xavier Johnsons to rebound more of those basketballs. And statistically speaking, the only one of them that was particularly good at it was Jalen Huchefino. And so, again, this is one of those things where I'm not saying it's not effort, too. It's
but
just
you don't need a PhD to rebound, is my point.
No, and you start to – but when you start to narrow – your list of options, and you start to say these are the only ways we can realistically win a 48.
Now, now we're seeing why they didn't win, because it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But the tough part is running an offense. I'm never going to kill Trey Galloway for that. I'm never going to be like, oh, when he was when he had to take over and give Hood-Schifino a 2 minute rest. Oh, gee. No, he's not a point guard. We know that he was a fill in point guard. We got a little taste of it last year at Northwestern when curfew or whatever happened there. Yeah. It's just not natural. I get it. But everybody from the day you start playing basketball knows how to rebound. It's a want thing. And sometimes some guy wants it more than you do, and I was disappointed not to see that, oh, man, our season's on the line. Let's get every loose ball and make him shoot us out of the gym.
And there was always sometimes, too, in those matchups in particular, you almost felt like you could feel – you could see Indiana holding on. Like, Indiana, to your point
– here, let me ball fake you so I can go right by you.
Well, but like, Indiana, to your point, knowing the disadvantage it was facing against – that kind of team, and almost just sort of playing a little too tight. How many of those games did Indiana start poorly?
All
you know, they started the Maryland game great. They started the Michigan game great. They started the Penn State game badly. They started the Iowa game badly. They started the Miami game badly. And again, maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, an element of mental weakness in this team, and they're still figuring some things out. And, you know, hey, listen, it's only – people don't want to hear this. This can't be the ceiling for Mike Woodson. But the flip side is, this is Indiana's best season in 7 years. Like, that's not a small thing. By some distance, this is the most success an Indiana roster has put on paper.
That's why there have been three coaches.
In 7 years.
That's
and
why
so
there have been three coaches.
It's not surprising, maybe, too, that these guys aren't – they're not a group of hardened winners. They're better than they were, but it's not like it's – again, it's not a Kansas where it's like, hey, we've got all of this learned behavior of what to do on this night, how to negate this mismatch or whatever else. And you felt like you could see in the games that Indiana struggled with down the stretch, particularly the ones that took on this complexion, it's like you could almost feel them playing in fear of the knowledge they had that the matchup was tough.
Yep, and it was tough.
And that's hard. But the flip side is every one of those games sort of turns out to realize their fears. And that team doesn't have the learned experience of, okay, this isn't a great matchup for us, but we know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
We let's harken back to the game where we overcame that. And so suddenly it they're humans too, and it just builds up. And then you, again, like that last 10 minutes where it's sort of like Miami's yanking down every offensive rebound, Indiana's putting up a bunch of quick threes.
Bad shots.
It's like that they're doing it because they can tell. They know what's coming on. They know what's going on. They know what's coming. Again, you want them to be robots, but they're not. In the back of their minds, they're thinking, we have seen this script, and nothing's going to change it unless we just start scoring points fast.
And the best way to do that is throw it to 23, and that didn't work because he only got 10 shots. Two tournament losses for Trace. No more than 10 shots in either one of them. That's a very interesting stat as well. That's Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. This is the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour when we leave you here in 27 and a half minutes. The Sweet 16 will be on WGCL tonight at 6, tomorrow at 6, Saturday at 5:30, and Sunday at 1:30. If you're not out and about listening to us, stop by the Crazy Horse Tavern. All the TVs will be on the hoops all weekend long. Brunch also Saturday and Sunday. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour will roll on after a quick timeout in Diane Daly's news headlines. We'll talk about the Hoosiers in a little bit of a historical precedence. You mentioned it's the best in 7 years. I don't think that's perhaps a reason to have a parade either, because what we've been talking about in the last six of them isn't very good. Hopefully it's hope for the future. The downside is Trace Jackson Davis won't be back, and we'll tell you else who we think might and might not be, but we will talk Trace Jackson Davis and his I don't want to say wasted. That's a tough word. I don't like to But this did not work out how we all fathomed it to. Injuries were a problem of it. Style was a problem of it. And an imperfect roster. Well, when you don't win, the roster is imperfect. So if anybody's offended by that term, well, I guess it would be worse if you were Purdue and had a perfect roster and lost a 116 game. Think about that. We're back. Well, Jimmy Buffett would suggest there's sunshine and waves and all the other fun stuff. Well, don't forget, it's going to rain. When it starts raining tonight, it's not going to end for a couple days. We could get anywhere from 3 to 5 inches. Be aware of that if you're in low-lying areas or have to travel or visit in any of those places. And you know, everybody has those friends or relatives who just don't pay attention, you might want to remind them that it's going to be awfully, awfully wet as we move through the weekend. We will not be with you tomorrow. We will have Sweet 16 basketball tonight at 6 o'clock. Tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, you'll have Maggie and Pirloff in the afternoon from CBS Sports. We will be celebrating the life of Terry Stultz tomorrow afternoon and not doing radio. Thanks to our bosses for making that happen. IHSAA High School State Title Class A and 2A Saturday morning after Your Money with David Hayes. The Elite Eight Saturday night, pregame at 5:30. Sunday, 1:30 pregame for the regional finals from Friday's winners. Saturday has tonight's winners. And there's Tom Izzo in Michigan State, the only Big Ten team in there. We'll save Painter for a rainy day. I don't want to get on that today. I want to do IU today. Trace Jackson Davis's career at IU was not wasted. I don't think that's the right word for it. Is it disappointing it did not come with any hardware? Absolutely. Was it a little bit unlucky because of the injuries we just talked about in the first segment of the program? Absolutely. Basketball is not a one-man game. No matter how some people want to paint it, you know, LeBron James doesn't go play with four other schlubs, right? He doesn't say, I'll just go here or there. No. He's trying to get guys on his team because he knows everybody needs help, whether it was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, or today with the Lakers. But the larger point stands. One guy can paper over some of the cracks, but you have to have a squad. And when your squad, and I'm not making excuses, how do you prevent injury? How do you prevent a guy from breaking his foot? How do you prevent a guy from twisting or tearing his meniscus or whatever that injury was going to be? You don't, but you have to deal with it. But what I think everybody forgets, and you're going to see a lot of that this weekend, especially Saturday and Sunday, Zach, these teams at this level usually do not go deeper than 8. Most of them don't go deeper than 7. And if one of the wheels falls off, there are going to be problems. And Indiana is built just like a lot of other teams, and you say, well, Glass, UCLA's lost their defensive stopper. Their big man's hurt. Yeah, and Gonzaga might absolutely take care of him tomorrow night.
And again, also, Mick Cronin's been there, what, 5 years? So once again, I say the guy, the ninth or tenth guy on the bench, has had maybe 3 years of being prepared to eventually step into this role. You just don't get that year in year two. There's also the context of, you know, there's a coaching change in the middle, which reset a lot of things, would have been reset even further. Obviously, I think people who are, you know, supportive of the idea of Trace Jackson Davis as a true program great point to that.
He's a statistical great. There's no arguing that.
I think his legacy, I think this team's legacy will be defined a little bit by what comes next. If Indiana
doesn't go to the tournament.
If Indiana doesn't kick on from here, then this will all feel sort of like a wasted opportunity. And we will probably confine, for example, Trace Jackson Davis just to the limits of his career. And we'll just say, you know, statistically, he did some things no one at Indiana had ever done. He stayed for 4 years, which people, you know, kids of his talent don't. Now, NIL probably changes that a little bit going forward, but, you know, even guys that were maybe fringe second-round picks usually wouldn't stay 4 years. They'd usually leave after a while. And certainly,
because they could get money.
Coaching change, all that kind of stuff. Certainly in that context, they wouldn't stay 4 years. If Indiana, which is obviously, I suspect, not going to look structurally very similar next year to what it looks like this year.
I think they're going to look more like Miami. What do you think?
I think they're going to look more like the Hawks in 2009.
Well, for people that don't remember that.
Long, athletic, positionless. I was writing something about this, and I recalled today that the most high-profile center the Hawks ever pursued was Stromile Swift.
From LSU.
Yeah. Who was just a
beanpole.
Shot blocker, rebounder, screen setter. That wasn't the way, you know. That was not the way. And that you know, we talk so much about Mike Woodson's time with the Knicks. That Hawks team was one he built
from scratch.
From the ground up with Billy Knight. You know, they chose, much to some people's chagrin, Marvin Williams over Chris Paul and Deron Williams. You know, they wanted length. They wanted athleticism. They wanted reach. They wanted probably a team
Marvin Williams was a sixth man on the North Carolina team.
I mean, they wanted a team that looked probably a lot like Kansas, you know, where KJ Adams is only 6'7" in the post. But go back and watch that game and just look at how long Kansas was.
Well, when you have 6'8" wing players, Grady Dick and Jalen Wilson.
And even like your point guard, I mean, I can't remember his name, but he's only like 6'1", but like I'm betting you he was +5, +6 in wingspan. So suddenly his head may only come up to Jalen Huccifino's nose, but his arms go all the way out to Trey Galloway.
Number three. What was his name?
He was a really good point guard. Yeah. But, you know, I think that while the roster is going to transition away from what this looked like the last couple of years, if let's live in a world where –
DeJuan Harris Jr.
There it is.
Number three. He was number three.
Let's live in a world where Indiana wins – the Big Ten in the next 3 years, or Indiana goes to a Final Four in the next 4 years, something like that, then I think that gets attached to Trace Jackson Davis's legacy insofar as people say that doesn't happen if the kid that also winds up third all-time in scoring, first all-time in rebounds, first all-time in blocks, fourth all-time, I think it was fourth all-time in field goal percentage, doesn't stick with us after 12 and whatever 17 and getting booed off the floor at Lucas Oil and a coaching change and having to buy into something completely different.
Right.
When, like, either A, he could have turned pro after his sophomore year, or B, you know what else he could have done? Gone into the portal.
He didn't.
And been the most coveted big man
ever
in all of basketball.
Imagine the money he would get from
summer,
Miami.
In the summer of 2021. There was no NIL then. It was still coming.
Right.
But you get my point, which is just I think it's going to be defined a little bit by what comes next.
The problem with what comes next, though, is what just happened. Well, if you can't win with Trace Jackson Davis, how are you going to beat anybody? What you got?
No, but think about, I mean.
But that's how fans think. They're like, you just rattled off all these stats.
Fans think about that because it's hard to see past, but there's always another player. Like before totally. Trace Jackson Davis, there was Juwan Morgan. And if you go out and, listen, go look at Cody Zeller's 2-year numbers. Map those out over 4 years. He has a very Trace Jackson Davis-esque career.
I don't disagree with that.
I'm not just taking away fans what Trace Jackson Davis
fans
did.
Fans will say you had Jalen Huccifino,
there will be
Trace
another
Jackson
one.
Davis, and you couldn't win with those guys, so there's no way you're going to win in the future with what you're doing.
But that's not how it works.
That's why you're here.
Yeah.
To tell people.
I mean,
that's just. I can tell them that. They're not going to listen to me.
I mean, there will always be somebody else. The question is,
will it be next year?
Can you rebuild a roster that is, by all rights, going to look very different?
Well, you just made the point of why you should be optimistic, because he's had to do this before in a professional setting. Now, that's different than in a college setting, but with the portal being open, Logan Duncombe is not returning to the program via his Twitter.
Yeah,
that's not surprising terribly at all. If you don't play, it's just not – just go. That's fine. You only live YOLO, go.
Yeah.
That's fine. But you're just replacing and replacing and replacing. May 11th is the transfer deadline. That's when it has to end. So we've got plenty of time to move and shake on all of this. Did Indiana do enough this year where fans should be hopeful, or is it too many mitigating circumstances to see it in a vacuum only?
You mean – like
the injuries.
You mean just the
is this good enough? Is that the right phrase?
Well,
I don't know.
Rain
come down. It's
pouring outside now. Mike Woodson himself said it's not good enough. I mean, he said Big Ten champ. I mean, he literally said Sunday night, I thought this team could go further.
Right.
And I did not do enough to get it there. That I failed. I failed this team is effectively what he said. I think in fairness, again, there were mitigating circumstances. And the other piece of this is, especially in the portal era, you know, this isn't going to work the way it worked in Woodson's era, where it was like, well, you know, there's nobody behind him, or there's, you know, he's leaving, but he's gonna step right up, or whatever it is. You are going to see teams that kind of come apart and get put back together very differently pretty often. That's how the portal is going to treat teams. At least for the foreseeable future. So I think if you're Indiana, if you're an Indiana fan, what you should feel encouraged by is 5 years out of the tournament, you hire a guy from the NBA, you're not sure how he's going to handle college. He gets his All-American big man to buy in. That All-American big man gets so much better. he gets the first high-level high school guard he decides he's going to prioritize. He gets him to commit, and he turns that kid, who is well thought of, but probably wasn't a first-round pick when the basketball season started, he turns that kid into a first-round pick, and you go to back-to-back NCAA tournaments. You finish with a winning record in Big Ten play for the first time in 7 years, which is an insane statistic, but it's true. He's got a winning record, he's got a winning record in the NCAA tournament. He's got a winning record in the Big Ten tournament. That's in the first 2 years. Now, is that good enough? If that's the ceiling? No. But after the previous 5 years, after the preceding 5 years, and then the risk of we're going to go hire a guy that doesn't know the college game, and we're going to trust that basketball's basketball, and that the stuff he brings down here is going to work and going to play, and he's going to be able to recruit enough and all that. At the baseline, it's gotten better. It's gotten better in terms of results. It's gotten better in terms of competitiveness. It's gotten better in terms of developing players and now being able to hold players up and say, if you come here, this is how you improve. We can make you better because we made him better, and we made him better, and we made him better. It's promising. Now, it's not promising in the traditional sense because it doesn't work this way really anymore, where it's almost all our guys are going to be three- and four-year players, and so when one leaves, you're going to see the next one coming in and all that.
Transfer portal.
Things are going to be a little bit more portal-driven, and I think,
that's what makes great programs great. You don't do it once in 5 years. You do it every year.
If you subscribe to the theory that Mike Woodson built these first two teams around horses for courses, this is what he had, and he built a team around what he had because you're not going to throw Trace Jackson Davis away. You're gonna give him every opportunity to, you know, let him carry you as far as he can. But if you subscribe to the theory too that Woodson is going to transition away from that into a different style of roster construction and therefore what he's putting on the floor, then again, it's promising. Is it good enough? No. Is it, I don't want to say a best case scenario for these first 2 years, but if somebody had told you, Mike Glascott, on April or on March, I think he was hired on the 19th, 2021, that Mike Woodson would go to back-to-back NCAA tournaments, he'd have a winning record.
First-round draft pick.
He'd have a winning record in Big Ten play. He'd have a winning record in the Big Ten tournament. He'd have a winning record in the NCAA tournament. And he'd put probably, I mean, Trace Jackson Davis is going to get drafted too somewhere. He'd have put multiple players in the NBA draft by the end of year two. You'd say, yeah, that's probably pretty good. I'd like to see what that looks like. I'd like to see where that goes.
Yep.
Now, you wouldn't say that's good enough unless – And you would say that's only good enough if the winning record in NCAA tournament play is he went to a national championship game or something like that, or a Final Four. But you would have looked at that on the day he was hired with any doubts you might have had, any questions you might have had, and you would have said, that'll play. That, after the previous 5 years, will get Indiana back on the right track. Now the job is to go up another level.